From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Alaska Governor Sarah Palin is the second woman to get a major party nomination as vice president and the first Republican. Boy, is she getting a lot of cheers and jeers for her views. The governor is anti-abortion, a longtime member of the National Rifle Association, and a supporter of teaching creationism in schools. But simply by being a nominee for the second highest office in the land, is Governor Palin the new face of feminism? Later in the show, we'll talk about how the Palin nomination is reinvigorating a debate over politics and parenting. But first, a look at women and leadership. With us, Dee Dee Meyer. She's a contributing editor to Vanity Fair, former White House press secretary to Bill Clinton, and author of Why Women Should Rule the World. We've also got Amy Holmes, CNN political analyst. She was also a speechwriter for former Republican Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist. Hi, guys. How you doing?
Very well. All right. How are you?
I'm doing great. Now, Dee Dee, let me start with you. Gloria Steinem wrote in a recent LA Times op-ed, quote, "Feminism has never been about getting a job for one woman. It's about making life more fair for women everywhere." By that standard, does Governor Palin represent progress for feminism?
Well, I'm not sure that that's the standard that I would apply, as much as I love and respect Gloria Steinem. I think that feminism is about giving women choices, different all kinds of choices about how they want to live their lives and raise their families if they choose to have families and manage, you know, that complicated work-life balance and approach the issues and the problems and the challenges in their own lives. So I do think that even though I disagree with Sarah Palin on virtually every issue I can think of, I think the fact that she has emerged on the scene, it is in many ways a step forward for women. I think that she embraces without apology the decisions that she's made and the way she balances her work and her family. Her family is very integrated into her life. I think a lot of women lead that way. I think she talks about motherhood as a training ground for leadership, which I think is critical, something I talk a lot about in my book, because if high school football is considered an adequate training ground for leadership, surely raising children, one of the most important jobs on the face of the planet, ought to be considered and is a fabulous training ground for leadership. So I think in ways like that, Sarah Palin is great for women, but I don't think her agenda as a national leader, as vice president and potentially president of the United States, would be good for all women. It's too narrow. It's too exclusive. And it denies a lot of women the choices that she's been allowed to make.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask you more about how your book fits in this idea of women's leadership, but I want to go to you, Amy. When you think about Sarah Palin, in what ways does her leadership reverb? What doors does it open, if any, for other women leaders? And how does it, you know, how is it playing among people who their leadership may be smaller, more local, more focused on the home and the family?
Well, I think it certainly reverberates among women who, like Dee Dee said, feel that motherhood has been a very valuable training ground, including Nancy Pelosi, who talked about being a mother of five was certainly a training ground for her. And it reverberates for all those women when she says, you know, she started out in the PTA, that those women who are on the PTA are like, my goodness, you can go from the PTA to governor of a state and then, you know, on a presidential ticket. So what we're seeing also is that it is having a reverberative effect among women who are looking at her and, you know, taking a second look. And there was just polls out today that John McCain is pulling ahead among white women, ahead of Barack Obama. I think, though, that this conversation is oftentimes a little bit too generational. And if you look at young women, for example, who flocked to Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton's call for breaking the glass ceiling really didn't reverberate among them. And oftentimes, older feminists, you know, they are frustrated that young women don't see that the gains that they have made and the strides they made on behalf of women, that younger women are not necessarily following them in political lockstep. So I think when you talk to younger women, they might not be quite as impressed with, you know, Hillary Clinton or Sarah Palin, that they feel that they have arrived and that they want to be regarded on their own terms, their own politics, without regard to gender.
Dee Dee, you broke ground as a woman who also was the White House press secretary. You're arguing now that women should rule the world. At least that's the title of the book. So
It's a little bit of a provocative title. What I really
exactly
argue is that women alongside men, women should be given as much opportunity as men are to rule the world in whatever way they see fit, the way Sarah Palin has done.
What do you think America is missing by not having had a proportional number of women leaders? I mean, compared to many other world governments, America has a very small percentage of women in the highest leadership positions, like in the House and Senate. Why do you think that it's important to change that?
Yeah, you know, the United States, we think of ourselves as being such a modern and progressive country, and yet I think we're 68th in the world in terms of women in the national legislature. I think the country has missed having a broader perspective. Women, it's not that women are better than men, it's that women often bring a different life experience. And again, I think Sarah Palin is a great example of this. They sometimes come up against different problems. They see challenges differently. They sometimes have different ideas about how to solve conflicts or resolve problems. And I think by having denied that perspective in so many ways, I think the country has missed out on some more creative ways to solve our problems and to make the society fairer, which I think continues to be a goal that most Americans deeply share. And I think as we see more women succeed and women rise to whatever level of leadership they choose, I think we see the value of that. You know, there's studies that show that more women in senior management position and on corporate boards makes companies more profitable. This isn't an argument about kumbaya, let's all hold hands. It's an argument about what's in our self-interest, and I believe that more women in positions of leadership is, in fact, in our self-interest.
Amy Peggy Noonan, former Reagan speechwriter, now a columnist, called the choice gimmicky and used an expletive when she thought she was off air. As the polls show, there seems to be a big bounce of support for Sarah Palin. But as various issues come up, sharply defining the roots of her religious beliefs and how she believes they interact with government, looking into her ethics regarding the firing of a government employee. Do you think, in fact, that she will be a liability, and this will be seen ultimately, if she becomes seen as a liability, as a problem for other women leaders?
No, and I think that what we have to sort of take a step back. Last week, there was quite a feeding frenzy with Sarah Palin because she was so unknown, and reporters, I mean, one reporter even said, oh my goodness, she's never been on Meet the Press. And I think we need to take a step back and sort of see where these issues settle out. For example, she's not advocated teaching creationism in the schools. She said if the topic comes up, the debate should not be squelched. But I think that Sarah Palin needs to be held up to the same scrutiny as any other politician. And questions about, you know, the role of religion in government is one that ought to be answered. And I think that's something that certainly female voters expect from their female politicians, that just because you're a woman doesn't mean you get to hide behind your skirt. So we will see in the next 2 months, you know, as we learn more about Governor Palin.
Dee Dee, you were certainly put through the fire as a White House press secretary. If you had one bit of advice to give Sarah Palin as she goes out into the media spotlight, what would it be?
Well, I think that you know, a couple of things. I would say she should continue to be, I mean, I'm not in the habit of giving the opposition a lot of support. I'm in the habit of taking it. But, look, I think she's the most important thing for her is to continue to be herself. I also think, though, that she has to be careful. You know, she's out, and I think, you know, words do, as Senator Obama has been saying, words do matter. And when she says, you know, I told Congress thanks but no thanks for that bridge to nowhere, she sort of skips the chapter where she was for it. She has to be careful because there is going to be a tremendous amount of scrutiny. There are going to be a lot more people looking at her record and matching up previous statements with current ones, more so than ever happened in her life. And I think getting used to that increased scrutiny, it's exponentially more pressure and exponentially more questions and exponentially more difficult to navigate, and she has to be prepared for that. It comes with the territory. And, you know, I think, look, she's Charlie Gibson from ABC News is going to interview her over the next couple of days. That's the first step. That's not the only step. She's going to need to face more questions, not because the press wants her to, but because the American people deserve answers. As Amy said, I mean, she's running for national office. She needs to put herself through the process like any candidate, male, female, governor, senator, you know, fish, fowl, whatever.
Right.
One of the things I've found really amusing about this process, and I think probably a lot of Americans have too, is that, you know, Democrats are screaming about, you know, she's not really a feminist, and Republicans all of a sudden have discovered, oh, my God, there's sexism out there. Who knew? And so I think it's kind of interesting to watch how she's shaken up some of the traditional roles that both parties like to play in these debates.
All right, Amy, I'm going to toss this to you, but then also get a quick hit from Dee Dee. Senator Hillary Clinton talked about putting 18 million cracks in the glass ceiling. She was talking about the voters that she got in the primaries and caucuses. Would we even be having a discussion about Sarah Palin? Would she even be in the national news or on the ticket if Senator Clinton had not gone forth and waged such a fierce battle for the presidential nomination?
Well, I don't think that Senator McCain would, you know, for example, pass over Sarah Palin if Hillary Clinton had become the Democratic nominee or the Democratic vice president. So I think the person who's responsible for Sarah Palin being, you know, on everyone's lips today is John McCain and his decision to choose her as VP. But something that happened on Friday that I just found really astonishing was the Obama campaign talking to the New York Times about how they were going to deploy Hillary Clinton to try to, you know, take the wind out of Sarah Palin's sails. And they said very explicitly that she was going to be on the campaign trail as a counterpoint to Sarah Palin. And I was reading this just thinking, my goodness, don't they see what they're saying? Which is the woman that they passed over is the perfect woman to attack the woman that the other guy picked. I mean, it was just really strange, twisted logic. And I talked to the Democratic strategist who said, and don't think Hillary Clinton hasn't noticed. And as you might have seen, her response was, I'm not going to attack Sarah Palin. This is about what I'm going to do for Barack Obama to get a Democrat in the White House.
All right, Dee Dee, just quickly, when you think about Senator Clinton's legacy, what is it going to be from this campaign?
Well, I think, first of all, just to answer the previous question briefly, there's no way Sarah Palin would have been on the ticket if Hillary Clinton hadn't run such a successful, in many ways, and unsuccessful in other ways, campaign. And I think Hillary Clinton's legacy will be that she is the first woman to have ever won a presidential primary. No woman's ever accomplished that before. It's hard to believe, but it's true. And not only that, but she stayed in there till the end. She got more votes than any Democratic presidential candidate in history, except for probably Barack Obama, although it was the closest contest in history. So I think she showed that a woman is tough enough, a woman can do it, that there's and that, you know, women don't decide on gender, but they decide on economic arguments, and that sometimes women can make those cases really powerfully. And I think that's what Hillary Clinton will continue to do through November, is to
make an economic case. Dee Dee, Amy, thank you.
Thank you, Fry.
You.
We were talking to contributing editor to Vanity Fair and former White House press secretary Dee Dee Myers. She's also the author of Why Women Should Rule the World, plus CNN political analyst Amy Holmes, a former speechwriter to Republican Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, and we'll continue talking about Sarah Palin and the mommy wars. This is NPR News.